Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Amy Held. Testimony is resuming at the criminal hush money trial of former President Donald Trump in New York City. NPR's Andrea Bernstein reports a former tabloid publisher is back on the witness stand, undergoing questioning now by defense lawyers.
David Pecker's sometimes lurid testimony has directly implicated Trump in making hush money payments in the waning days of the 2016 campaign to silence women who said they'd had affairs with Trump. Covering up those payments underlies the 34 counts of falsifying business records at issue in the trial. The defense is eliciting testimony that the National Enquirer frequently bought stories in order to kill them. It's unclear who the next witness will be. Prosecutors aren't saying to prevent Trump from disparaging them. The DA's office has asked the judge to hold Trump in criminal contempt for violating his gag order and to pay $10,000 for each of 10 infractions, including one about David Pecker as recently as Thursday morning. Andrea Bernstein, NPR News, New York.
University protests against the Israel-Hamas war are spreading across the country. Many have been peaceful, but hundreds of people have been arrested, some for violating rules against setting up encampments on campus. Steve Futterman reports from Los Angeles on some skirmishes at UCLA.
On the UCLA campus, there were several brief clashes between pro-Palestinian and pro-Israel protesters. For the moment, UCLA administrators appeared to be willing to allow the encampment to remain in place as long as there is no violence. Marie Salem is one of the protesters and says she supports the Palestinian people.
We are really focused on our demands. First, divestment from corporations.
Corporations that do business with Israel. Meanwhile, at the University of Southern California, the main graduation ceremony there has been canceled. The decision came one day after 93 protesters were arrested and its tent encampment was taken down. For NPR News, I'm Steve Futterman in Los Angeles.
U.S. troops have begun pier construction to facilitate the delivery of food aid into Gaza. Pentagon spokesman Major General Pat Ryder says at the same time there was a mortar attack in the general vicinity of the pier yesterday.
We're aware of reports that a small number of mortars landed in the vicinity of the marshalling yard area for humanitarian assistance that will eventually be the delivery site that this pier will support.
Humanitarian assistance is expected to arrive by sea there as soon as next month. The U.S. military is set to help execute the mission for several months without setting foot within the Gaza Strip, where hunger and starvation are widespread. Aid groups have expressed concern about working within Gaza after attacks. This is NPR News. Egypt has sent a high-level delegation to Israel today with the hope of brokering a ceasefire agreement with Hamas in Gaza. Israel, meantime, is said to still be planning an offensive on the southern city of Rafah, where a majority of Palestinians, more than a million people, are sheltering. Egypt is warning such an attack could be catastrophic for the region. United Methodists at the General Conference in North Carolina are advancing measures to end the church's ban on LGBTQ clergy and same-sex weddings. NPR's Jason DeRose reports.
The proposal, called regionalization, essentially would allow different geographic regions, North America, Europe, Africa, and the Philippines, to make their own rules about ministry. It passed by 78% and still needs to be ratified by local annual conferences in the coming year. By breaking apart the Methodist Church in this way, it's far more likely that its ban on same-sex marriage and LGBTQ clergy could be lifted in the U.S. and possibly Europe. Meanwhile, a separate proposal to remove restrictive language globally is on the agenda for this United Methodist Conference next week. Jason DeRose, NPR News.
The power of trees is evergreen, but of particular note on this Arbor Day. The idea to plant more trees, which safeguard the health and biodiversity of the planet, has spread since 1970, when President Nixon designated National Arbor Day. The Arbor Day Foundation says a half billion new trees have been planted worldwide in the past 50 years, with the goal of planting 500 million more by 2027. This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Fisher Investments. As a fiduciary, Fisher Investments is obligated to act in their clients' best interest. Learn more at fisherinvestments.com. Investing in securities involves the risk of loss. This is NPR.
Good afternoon and welcome to Noon Hour Magazine here on Allegheny Mountain Radio. This is Heather. It's 6 minutes after 12 o'clock, a little cloudy looking out the front door of the Frost Studios. We're up to 51 degrees. We'll have a look at our weather forecast coming up for you in a few minutes. In our local news today, we're going to hear about some invasive plant grants being offered in Highland County, but we've got a deadline for application coming up pretty soon, so we'll hear all more about that from Carrie Sponogle. We're also going to hear about a compromise between the Bath supervisors and the school board concerning budgets. So that's coming up in our local news. We'll have all of our usual Noon Hour features coming your way. We're going to hear from Pistol Pete in the second half of the hour with our weekly sports update. Let's get the ball rolling with our local news stories.
This is Carrie Sponogle, your Virginia Cooperative Extension agent for Bath and Highland Counties, and today I would like to speak to you about the Invasive Plant Control Program for Highland County. The Highland County Board of Supervisors approved an invasive plant control program for the county for 2024. Under this program, Highland County landowners with at least 50 acres with 10% infestation of three main species of invasive plants can apply for an incentive payment to offset herbicide costs to target these specific invasives. Landowners can receive up to 50% cost share on herbicides approved under the program. Invasives targeted are multiflora rose, Japanese barberry, and autumn olive. These species establish themselves on poor soils, crowding out native plants, and are spread by birds. Application and information packets are being sent via paper mail and email listings from the Highland Extension office. To participate, landowners must complete the application and return it to the Highland Extension office through April 30th. Following application review, approved applicants will be sent a letter indicating the maximum payment for which they would qualify. Approved applicants must use listed herbicides in the program guidelines. Original pesticide purchase receipts must be submitted to the Highland Extension office by the last business day in September. Herbicide applications must be completed by the end of September. Treated areas may be subject to spot checks. Qualifying program participants will receive their incentive payment from Highland County in October. The cost share payment is for purchases of herbicide only, not to include equipment or application costs. Payment received for herbicides will be lesser of 1, the amount stated in the approval letter, or 2, 50% of the cost of the herbicide. This is a first-come, first-served basis program in Highland County. A waiting list will be maintained to accommodate landowners that sign up after all the funds are allocated. For more information, please contact Virginia Cooperative Extension Highland County at 540-468-2225 or email myself, Carrie Sponogle, at karis@vt.edu.
The Bath County Board of Supervisors and the Bath County School Board landed on a compromise last Wednesday night at a joint work session. County Admin Michael Bender told supervisors that he and the Bath County Public School Superintendent, Dr. Rick Bowling, had been working to combine the maintenance and fuel expenses for the county and school system into just the county's budget. Reportedly, this would save the schools around $1 million, but it would transfer the school system's maintenance director, bus garage, and fuel sites to the county. The arrangement would leave electricity, water, and phone in the school's budget along with custodial positions. The school's new maintenance director would report to the county starting this summer in July, and extra costs associated with training would go out at the end of October when the current director, Mark Cook, is fully retired. This would also mean county vehicles can use the pump stations. The three diesel trucks used for snow removal would also be transferred to the county under this arrangement, and the county would create a new public works department that's separate from the Parks and Recreation Department. Bender anticipates the school system savings to be around $1.8 million when the garage, fuel, and maintenance are factored into the county's budget. He also clarified how many people would be in the public works department. six total, with three of those going from the school system to the county system. Those positions include two custodians and a maintenance director, but as of now, one of those positions is vacant. Speaking of vacant positions, School Superintendent Bowling estimated nine positions were unfilled last year, and the majority of them were teaching positions, and that basically the budgeted money for the vacant positions was the money that was returned. Bowling asked if the compromise was enough for all board members, since the pending budget deadline was preventing the schools from issuing contracts to secure teachers. School board member Zach Burns asked each board member if they were okay with just giving the county control over maintenance and fuel, or if more needed to be cut. Supervisor Fry said he was fine with the compromise for the schools to hand over fuel maintenance to the county. Supervisors Roy Burns and Lockridge felt the same, but Lockridge noted the growing deficit the county faced. Supervisor Shiflett expressed discontent with vehicles being taken out of the county on a daily basis. County Admin Bender asked if both boards wanted to go ahead and take care of the county's garage now, and all of them expressed interest. Supervisor Burns shared the consensus from the meeting was that the school system is going to hand over maintenance, fuel sites, and its bus garage to the county, along with trimming any additional items the school system can. The next budget meeting will be held by the school board April 29th at 11 a.m. at the school administration building in Warm Springs. For AMR News, I'm Abby Dufour.
The Pocahontas County Opera House is a supporter of Allegheny Mountain Radio, a 250-seat historic theater located in Marlinton, West Virginia. The Pocahontas County Opera House Foundation presents an annual performance series of both local and international musicians, theater groups, and other performers. More information is available at PocahontasOperaHouse.org.
Support for Allegheny Mountain Radio comes from Mitchell Chevrolet and sales staff, Jane Hunter Wilson, Brian Tankersley, and Trevor Hammonds. Mitchell Chevrolet is located in Marlinton and offers a full line of Chevrolet trucks, cars, SUVs, and crossover utility vehicles, as well as service repairs open Monday through Friday and Saturdays. The phone number is 304-799-6388 or 1-800-799-6388.
Friends, we have older neighbors who could use some good nutrition and kindness. Hi, this is Harmony Leonard, inviting you to join us as a Meals on Wheels volunteer. You'll be delivering hot meals, safety checks, and hope to older adults who need it most. Hours are flexible and the rewards are countless. You can make a difference today by calling 540-468-2178.
It is 14 minutes after 12 o'clock. You're listening to Noon Hour Magazine here on Allegheny Mountain Radio. We are at 51 degrees here at the Frost Studio. Morning clouds, supposed to be coming partly to mostly sunny this afternoon. We've still got quite a bit of cloud cover. Hopefully the sun will peek out here this afternoon. Highs in the mid to upper 50s with light winds out of the southeast. Mostly cloudy tonight. A chance of showers after midnight. Lows in the 40s with southeast winds at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Mostly cloudy tomorrow with a chance of morning showers. Highs in the upper 50s to the low 60s. South winds at 5 to 15 miles per hour. Mostly cloudy tomorrow night. In the evening, then clearing overnight with lows in the upper 40s to the low 50s with light and variable winds. Sunny and warmer on Sunday with highs in the 70s. Clear Sunday night with lows down in the 50s. The Highland County Recycling Trailer is at the Stonewall Raritan Building today through Sunday. Windy Cove Presbyterian Church kicks off their 275th anniversary celebration this evening. That's at 6:30 p.m. at the church. They'll have a piano-viola concert featuring musicians from Garth Newell. All are welcome, and a reception will follow. We have some funeral notices to share with you today. Donald J. Sercosta, age 78, of Roncevert, formerly of Marlinton, passed away Wednesday, April 24th. The funeral will be Sunday at 1:30 p.m. at Kimball Funeral Home in Marlinton with Jimmy Arbogast. Burial will follow at the Mountain View Cemetery. Friends may call tomorrow evening from 5 to 7 p.m. at the funeral home. Again, that's Donald J. Sircosta, formerly of Marlinton, who passed away April 24th. Online condolences may be shared at KimballFuneralHome.com. Edith Emma Popplewell Dilly, age 104, of Lewisburg, passed away Thursday, April 18th, at Seasons Place. A celebration of life will be held on Sunday at 2 p.m. at May Chapel in White Sulphur Springs with Pastor Lowell Odell. Burial will be at the church cemetery. Again, that's Edith Popplewell Dilly of Lewisburg, who passed away April 18th. Memorial donations may be made to the May Chapel Cemetery Fund in White Sulphur Springs, West Virginia. Online condolences may be shared at LanceFuneralHome.com. Dreama Dale King Blake, age 87, of Hot Springs, passed away Thursday, April 18th at Bath Community Hospital. A celebration of life will be held on Sunday at 3 p.m. at the Falling Spring Evangelical Presbyterian Church with Pastor Mike Matlack. Friends may call Sunday afternoon from 2 to 3 p.m. at the church. Again, that's Dreama Dale King Blake of Hot Springs, who passed away April 18th. Online condolences may be shared at McLaughlinandYoung.com. Deborah Lou Roy, age 68, of Marlinton, passed away Friday, April 19th, at the Pocahontas Center in Marlinton. Per her wishes, she will be cremated with no services. Again, that's Deborah Lou Roy of Marlinton, who passed away April 19th. Online condolences may be shared at LanceFuneralHome.com.
Daily funeral announcements are brought to you by Oba Funeral Home. With locations in both McDowell and Warm Springs, Virginia, they have served families for over 95 years. Information and online obituaries can be found at obafuneralhome.com. They may be reached at 540-839-3451 for their Bath County location and 540-396-3451 for assistance in Highland County.
Stardate, April 26th. The brightest star in the night sky is getting ready to leave it for a while. Sirius, the dog star, is low in the southwest as night falls. Over the next few weeks, it'll sink deeper into the twilight, then disappear from view. Sirius is almost 9 light years away, and it actually consists of 2 stars, not one. The one we see is a good bit bigger, brighter, and heavier than the Sun. The other is about the same mass as the Sun, but a whole lot smaller, only as big as Earth. That star is a white dwarf, It's the crushed core of a star that originally was more massive than its companion. Because of those extra pounds, the star aged more quickly. It puffed up to giant proportions. When it could no longer produce energy in its core, it cast off its outer layers, leaving only the dead core. The white dwarf is so small and faint that it's visible only through a telescope. The bright star of Sirius eventually will suffer the same fate. And so will the Sun, but not for several billion years. Sirius will return to view in the morning sky in August, with the exact date depending on your location. From ancient Egypt, it disappeared for about 70 days. Sirius was important in both religious and secular life, so 70 days became the length of time set aside to prepare a dead king's body for the afterlife. And the star's reappearance marked the start of a new year, in a calendar regulated by the dog star. You can find out how to subscribe to our daily program at stardate.org. For the McDonald Observatory, I'm Billy Henry.
Stardate comes to you on these stations with the help of the Green Bank Observatory in Green Bank, West Virginia. GBO is a facility of the National Science Foundation.
This is Bird Note. When poet Claire Wamenholm listened for birds at a nature preserve, she realized that wherever she was on the property, she could hear the thrum of the nearby highway. The experience inspired this poem.
You can always hear the highway. Beneath the eastern Phoebe, it hums alongside the hermit thrush and indigo bunting. It is almost like a river, but it is not a river. It is not outrunnable. There are moments when the marsh wrens die down and the highway fills them like the blood in your ears. There are no real lulls. You could call the highway a zipper because of the way it buzzes above the ruby-crowned kinglet and the willow flycatcher. You could call it a drone or a moan. I have never heard a vesper sparrow or a dark-eyed junco. A chickadee is hatching crisply from its egg. A gray catbird is ripping a millipede from the meadow, but how would you know? The highway's sound is like a strong wind or like a heavy curtain being dragged along the ground. It is louder than the alarm call of any bird, louder than the noise a barn swallow makes when it is being eaten. I may never hear a brown thrasher, a pine warbler, a rose-breasted grosbeak, a common yellowthroat. There are 160,955 miles of highway in America.
Hear more poetry about birds on our website, birdnote.org.
On This Day is presented by the Highland Historical Society. Today is April 26th. On this day in 1858, Cuthbert B. Bashaw of Doe Hill recorded in his will that two slave boys, Henry, son of old Patty, formerly the slave of William Hammond, and a six-month-old son of his slave Caroline, to be free at age 21 because they were too white to be slaves.
Minutes after 12 o'clock, let's have a quick look at our sports calendar. Warrior Girls Softball versus the Summer County Lady Bobcats this afternoon, 5:30 p.m. at home. And the Warrior Boys Varsity Baseball Team versus the Pendleton County Wildcats, that's coming up Tuesday, 6 p.m. at Pendleton.
From the Farm Credit Studios, this is On the Farm Radio, rural and agricultural news coming up next. Today's program is made possible by Farm Credit, a nationwide financial cooperative serving agriculture and rural America since 1916. Farm Credit provides loans for farms, homes, land, and agribusiness, coverage in every county in all 50 states. It also includes an educational component called Farm Credit Knowledge Center. Information at farmcredit.com.
Equal housing lender, NMLS number 456965.
You're listening to On the Farm Radio with Jeff Ishii.
The Junior Dairy Leader Program at Cornell University is intended to reach young people between the ages of 16 and 19, those young people who have an interest in exploring careers in the dairy industry. That's according to Dr. Tom Overton, Chair, Department of Animal Science at Cornell.
That's been a tremendous recruiting tool for us. Again, really exposes young people to what the career opportunities are, you know, if they go, you know, to go into agriculture, to go into dairy, to go, you know, to go to college and further education and things like that, and the opportunities that maybe hold them when they're done.
And Overton says the enrollment trend is positive.
One of the things that we've seen this year, we've got a very strong class of potential incoming first-year students. Probably our largest kind of dairy and ag-focused class we've had in a number of years.
Dr. Tom Overton, Chair, Department of Animal Science at Cornell University, and our thanks to John Clark with FeedWorks USA for his assistance in this report.
Spring and summer are prime time for ticks that can spread Lyme disease and other infections. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention would like to remind you to wear bug repellent when outdoors, shower as soon as possible after coming indoors, and check your whole body for ticks every day. If you've been bitten by a tick and develop fever, rash, or fatigue, seek medical care. To learn more, visit www.cdc.gov/Lyme.
Farmers, take time for safety. Look out for power lines before exiting the cab. When loading and transporting machinery, and when raising or unfolding equipment arms and extensions, use caution when handling irrigation pipe. Keep equipment at least 10 feet from power lines and use a spotter when near power lines or electrical equipment. We thank farmers for all they do. Learn more at safeelectricity.org.
Stay abreast of rural and agricultural news all around our region at onthefarmradio.com. Our pearl of wisdom today, this one came in back in January of 2002 from listener Mavis Wilcox. Mavis says to never judge a day by the weather. Thank you, Mavis, for that pearl of wisdom. You're on the farm, and I'm Ish.
Support for Allegheny Mountain Radio comes from the Virginia Education Association. Resources for parents and teachers at veanea.org. Because a good education is good for everybody.
This is your weekly feeder cattle report on Allegheny Mountain Radio. Average prices are based on information from the USDA for statewide sales in Virginia and averages of the three livestock markets of Caldwell, Moorefield, and Marlinton in West Virginia. For the week preceding April 18th in Virginia, medium and large framed non-weaned steers weighing 5 to 600 pounds brought $288.50, 6 to 700 pounds $265.46, 7 to 800 pounds $217.38, 8 to 900 pounds $218, and 900 to 1,000 pounds $181.28. Medium and large framed non-weaned heifers weighing 5 to 600 pounds brought $242.26, 6 to 700 pounds $229.10, 7 to 800 pounds $213.18, 8 to 900 pounds $185.27, and 900 to 1,000 pounds $147.50. In West Virginia, medium and large framed non-weaned steers weighing 5 to 600 pounds brought $311.95, 6 to 700 pounds $307.36, 7 to 800 pounds $277, 8 to 900 pounds $229.13, and 900 to 1,000 pounds $214.76. Medium and large framed non-weaned heifers weighing 5 to 600 pounds brought $264.90, 6 to 700 pounds $234.50, 7 to 800 pounds $205.29, and 8 to 900 pounds $205.
The weekly feeder cattle report is brought to you by Beverage Construction. They are a general contractor licensed and insured to operate in Virginia. Building since 1978, they offer foundation to finish construction. Their phone number is 540 416-468-2593. And email is beveragehomes@htcnet.org.
Now the latest from VNN, the Virginia News Network.
A Pulaski Town Council member faces multiple misdemeanor charges for alleged ethics and conflict of interest violations. Michael Rice, who denies intentional wrongdoing, failed to disclose his ties to the Calfee Community and Cultural Center and a consulting firm where he is accused of trying to obtain public funds for personal interest. The Cardinal News reports the investigation began in October of 2023 and Rice turned himself in last week. He claims the charges stem from his community activism and vows to fight them. The case is ongoing, with Rice and his attorney preparing for the discovery phase. Roanoke College received a startup grant from the Virginia Board of Education to launch a new laboratory school for high school students enrolled in a dual enrollment program. The program, called Explore at RC, in partnership with Salem City Schools, will use the $3.5 million grant to offer courses in various subjects and career pathways. Roanoke College aims to expand the program to neighboring districts in the future. The Jamestown Settlement will celebrate Virginia's Native Americans and their traditional and contemporary art forms. Thomas Cage with the details.
Honoring the legacies of Virginia Native American tribal communities, the Jamestown Settlement will hold on May 4th Indigenous Arts Day. Slated to start at 11 a.m., the event will spotlight indigenous culture and its contemporary and traditional art forms, including music and dancing. The day's performances will be led by the Red Crooked Sky American Indian Dance Troupe, as well as drums by the Stony Creek Singers and flutist Nathan Elliott and Lakota storyteller Felicity Mezzaluna. According to the Jamestown-Yorktown Foundation, craftspeople and indigenous artists will demonstrate and display their wares on Jamestown Settlement Mall.
I'm Rebecca Hughes.
This is VNN, the Virginia News Network.
It is 27 minutes before 1 o'clock. You're listening to Noon Air Magazine here on Allegheny Mountain Radio. Becoming partly to mostly sunny this afternoon, highs mid to upper 50s, mostly cloudy tonight with a chance of showers after midnight, and lows in the 40s with southeast winds at 10 to 15 miles per hour.
I wanna wish you a happy birthday. I wanna help you celebrate.
We want to wish a very happy birthday today to Elizabeth Hansen and Patty Harris, celebrating local birthdays today. We also have a couple of anniversaries. We want to wish a very happy anniversary to our very own Danny and Renee Cardwell, and to Taylor Sullivan and Anna Kane, celebrating, I believe they are both couples, celebrating their 10th anniversary today. So congratulations, guys. Other notable birthdays today include ornithologist John James Audubon, Frederick Law Olmsted, who designed Central Park in New York City, comedian and singer Carol Burnett, actor martial artist Jet Li, and actor Channing Tatum from the Magic Mike movies.
A milestone recording that came about quite by accident. You're on The Soundbeat. Perry Bradford wrote Crazy Blues, and the great Sophie Tucker was originally slated to record. When she was unable to make the session due to illness, Bradford convinced record execs to let jazz singer Mamie Smith fill in. Here she is on that OK label recording from 1920. That last-minute substitution would prove historic, marking the first time a black singer appeared on a blues record, one that sold over a million copies in just 6 months. For more on the historic session, go to soundbeat.org right now.
Soundbeat is produced at the Belfer Audio Archive, Syracuse University Libraries. I'm Brett Barry.
Hey everyone, this is Pistol Pete Atkinson with the weekly sports roundup. Pocahontas County Schools. The Warriors boys varsity baseball team cruised to a big win against Bath County on Monday, April 22nd in Hot Springs, Virginia, winning 19-2. Luke Gaynor went 4-for-4 with 2 runs scored and 5 RBI for Pocahontas. Warren Burns and Chris Williams both had 3 hits, and Logan Keatley belted 2 doubles and drove in 5 runs. Wyatt Hendrick got the win for the Warriors, allowing 1 run over 3.2 innings. Nathan Hunt and A.J. St. Clair slashed 2 hits each for the Chargers, while Jake Bogus, Cooper Lowry, Owen Perdue, and Branson Gordon all had 1 hit. Bogus, Remington Gordon, Lowry, and Hunt all pitched for Bath County, with Bogus taking the loss. Bath County dropped the record to 0-3 in the Pioneer District, 1-6 overall. Bath County Schools. The boys and girls varsity track and field team participated in a meet at Stanton High School on Wednesday, April 17th. Chargers' Natalie White won the 1,600-meter run for Bath County with a time of 5:55.17. Abby Phillips was the lone competitor in the 100-meter hurdles, coming in with a time of 21:66. Lacey Ryder placed third in the 200-meter dash with a 31.26 and sixth in the 100-meter dash with a 14:78. White placed fourth in the 800-meter run with a 2:48.92. Matt Harold placed seventh for the guys in the 800-meter run with a 3:19.62. The girls' team finished third in the four-team event. The boys' varsity and JV baseball teams traveled to Elliston, Virginia to face Eastern Montgomery in a district matchup on Thursday, April 18th, losing 13-8. A.J. St. Clair went 3-for-3 for Bath County, with Jake Bogus, Owen Perdue, and Nathan Hunt getting 2 hits apiece. Bogus scored 2 runs and drove in 2. Isaac Ingram had 2 RBI, and both Hunt and Grayson Walton scored twice. Bogus took the loss for Bath in relief of Ingram, who was the starter. Remington Gordon recorded the final 2 outs in the 6th inning. Together, the 3 struck out 4 batters, walked 8, and gave up 9 hits. The boys' varsity team faced Craig County on Friday, April 19th at home, losing 11-7. Cam Lowry and Ryan Ratcliffe had 2 hits each for the Chargers, and both Ratcliffe and Walton scored 2 runs apiece. Lowry, Hunt, and Gordon all pitched for the Chargers, combining to strike out 6 and walk 6. Hunt was saddled with the loss. The girls' varsity tennis team hit the road to face Buffalo Gap on Thursday, April 18th, losing 6-3. Bath County winners were Brooke Hess at number 3 singles, Sophie Allstack at number 6 singles, and Allstack and Adriana Miller at number 3 doubles. The girls then faced Bland County at home on Monday, April 22nd, in a match winning 7-2 to even the record at 1-1. Abby Phillips, Brooke Hess, Alyssa DePop, and Sophie Allstack all had singles wins for the Bath, with Allstacks teaming up with Miller in doubles, along with Sadie Alphen and Phillips, and Hess and DePope to sweep the doubles for the Chargers. The boys' varsity soccer team hosted Eastern Montgomery in a match on Thursday, April 18th, losing 6-0. Bath County goalkeeper Frankie DeBow had 7 saves. On Friday, April 19th, Bath faced Craig County in Newcastle, Virginia, winning 12-0, moving the record to 1-2 in the Pioneer District, 3-5 overall. Andrew Turner, Luke Turner, and Braden Mabe all scored hat tricks for the Chargers. Andrew Turner led the Chargers with 5 goals and 3 assists. Luke Turner scored 3 goals and 1 assist, and Mabe scored 3 goals and 2 assists. Miguel Malpica added a goal, and Carter Hooker had an assist for the Chargers. The girls' varsity soccer team faced Auburn in a home match on Friday, April 19th, losing 8-0. On Tuesday, April 23rd, the girls faced Miller School of Albemarle near Charlottesville, losing 6-0, dropping the record to 1-7-1. Bath goalkeeper Zoe Jenkins stopped 16 shots against Miller School. Highland County Schools. The boys' varsity baseball team hosted Richwood in a game on Thursday, April 18th, winning 10-2, moving the record to 2-2 in the Pioneer District, 5-4 overall. Rams' John Wagner and Zach Armstrong combined for 13 strikeouts. Wagner started the game and went 6.1 innings, scattering 7 hits, allowing 2 runs, striking out 11, and walking 2. Armstrong struck out 2 batters. Wyatt Clevenger and Zach Wright had 2 hits each and 2 RBI apiece. Armstrong had two hits and an RBI, and Evan Kimball hit a solo home run to lead off the bottom of the sixth inning. Wagner and Tristan Carpenter had one hit each, as the Rams collected nine hits overall. The Rams stole 11 bases, with three each coming from Wagner and Armstrong, and two from Eli Moore. The boys and girls varsity track team participated in an 8-team Lumberjack Invitational in Richwood, West Virginia, Tuesday, April 23rd. The boys scored 36.33 points, placing fourth, and the girls scored 17 points. For the Rams, Jasmine Douglas placed second in the 100 meters with a 14:10 time, fourth in the 200 meters with a 30:20 time. Zelia Good placed fifth in the 400 meters with a 1:16.82 time. Colleen Adams tied for fourth in the high jump with a 4-foot-2-inch jump. Anna Moyers placed third in the long jump with a 13-foot-11-inch leap. Eli Moore placed third in the 400 meters with a 56.82 time, and John Wagner placed third in the shot put with a 35-foot, 8.5-inch toss. The girls, Douglas, Good, Adams, and Moyers, placed second in the 4x100-meter relay. Information for this report came from Mark Pfeiffer of the Recorder, Max Preps, and individual school websites. For more detailed information and scores, please visit the story on AMR's website. This has been Pistol Pete Ackerson for Allegheny Mountain Radio News.
Allegheny Mountain Radio is supported by the Bath County Public Library. Located in Warm Springs, the library strives to cultivate opportunities for learning, foster the fun in reading, and serve communities as information professionals. Hours of operation are 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday, Tuesday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., and 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Saturdays. For more information, 540-839-7286.
Here's today's edition of Health in a Heartbeat. Sleep deprivation is common, and in some professions, potentially dangerous. Sleep deprivation is a chronic issue in the United States. Many abide by it by design. We study for an advanced degree. We take on a second job because our families simply need the extra money. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says roughly 1 in 3 adults in the United States reports not getting enough rest. And nearly 40% of adults say they accidentally nod off during the day at least once a month. Throw in the added risk of serious injury or death that comes with sleep deprivation, and you can see why being able to detect a lack of sleep is important in situations and professions that require being alert. Now, researchers in Australia and the UK say they have developed a blood test that can tell when someone has gone 24 hours or more without sleep. The test uses a combination of markers found in the blood of healthy volunteers. It detected with 99.2% accuracy when people had been awake for 24 hours compared with a well-rested state. The blood test requires further validation, both for forensic use and to understand how it performs outside a laboratory environment. Future studies may look at the feasibility of saliva or breath sample tests and developing biomarkers that can point to shorter periods of lost sleep. Researchers say their tests could eventually be used to assess someone's fitness before they head out to drive a truck cross-country, for example. The tests could also become part of the record in post-crash or accident analysis. Tests notwithstanding, we all need our rest. Make sure you get yours. Health in a Heartbeat is produced by University of Florida Health, committed to advancing excellence in patient care, research, and education, and by WUFTFM. Today's script is featured on the web at heartbeatradio.org. Our website provides a script archive and includes links to other trusted health-related websites.
The cost of methane emissions. I'm Randy Simon, and this is Earthwise, a look at our changing environment. Stanford University-led research has determined that American oil and gas operations are emitting more than 6 million tons of methane each year. The emissions come from both intentional vents and unintentional leaks. Methane is the main component of natural gas, and losing that much of it through leakage is costing the industry $1 billion a year just in lost revenue. Adding in harm to the economy and human well-being caused by adding this much potent greenhouse gas to the atmosphere is estimated to increase the cost of these emissions to $10 billion a year. These emission and cost estimates are roughly three times the level predicted by the U.S. government. The Stanford numbers are based on roughly a million aerial measurements of wells, pipelines, storage, and transmission facilities in six of the nation's most productive oil and gas regions, located in Texas, New Mexico, California, Colorado, Pennsylvania, and Utah. These areas account for 52% of U.S. onshore oil production and 29% of gas production. The survey also found that fewer than 2% of the methane emitters are responsible for 50 to 80% of emissions in four of the regions. It also found that midstream infrastructure, which includes gathering and transmission pipelines, compressor stations, and gas processing plants, is responsible for about half of total emissions. While the federal government estimates that methane leakage averages about 1% of gas production, the new survey puts the number at 3%, and some regions lose almost 10% to leakage. Better tracking and fixing these leaks, especially the larger ones, is essential for climate change mitigation. Earthwise is a production of WAMC. Find us on social media at WAMC Radio and listen anytime at WAMCpodcasts.org.
It is 14 minutes before 1 o'clock. Let's have another look at our weather forecast. Becoming partly to mostly sunny this afternoon, highs in the mid to upper 50s. Cloudy skies tonight with a chance of showers after midnight and lows in the 40s. Mostly cloudy tomorrow with a chance of morning showers, highs in the upper 50s to the low 60s. Mostly cloudy tomorrow evening. And then clearing overnight, we have lows in the upper 40s to the low 50s. Sunny and warmer on Sunday with highs in the 70s. Clear Sunday night with lows in the 50s. Jeanette in Bowler, a high of 66, low 40, 47 this morning, and a trace of precipitation. Keith in Bluegrass, high of 61, low 39, 44 this morning, a peak wind gust of 27 miles per hour. Jason in Bartow, high of 64, low 35, 46 this morning. And Irwin in Slaty Fork, high of 60, low 45, 48 this morning. And a peak wind gust of 7 miles out of the southeast this morning. We're going to have another listen to our local news.
The Bath County Board of Supervisors and the Bath County School Board landed on a compromise last Wednesday night at a joint work session. County Admin Michael Bender told supervisors that he and the Bath County Public School Superintendent, Dr. Rick Bowling, had been working to combine the maintenance and fuel expenses for the county and school system into just the county's budget. Reportedly, this would save the schools around $1 million, but it would transfer the school system's maintenance director, bus garage, and fuel sites to the county. The arrangement would leave electricity, water, and phone in the school's budget along with custodial positions. The school's new maintenance director would report to the county starting this summer in July, and extra costs associated with training would go out at the end of October when the current director, Mark Cook, is fully retired. This would also mean county vehicles can use the pump stations. The three diesel trucks used for snow removal would also be transferred to the county under this arrangement, and the county would create a new public works department that's separate from the Parks and Recreation Department. Bender anticipates the school system savings to be around $1.8 million when the garage, fuel, and maintenance are factored into the county's budget. He also clarified how many people would be in the public works department. Six total, with three of those going from the school system to the county system. Those positions include two custodians and a maintenance director, but as of now, one of those positions is vacant. Speaking of vacant positions, School Superintendent Bowling estimated nine positions were unfilled last year, and the majority of them were teaching positions, and that basically the budgeted money for the vacant positions was the money that was returned. Bowling asked if the compromise was enough for all board members, since the pending budget deadline was preventing the schools from issuing contracts to secure teachers. School board member Zach Burns asked each board member if they were okay with just giving the county control over maintenance and fuel, or if more needed to be cut. Supervisor Fry said he was fine with the compromise for the schools to hand over fuel maintenance to the county. Supervisors Roy Burns and Lockridge felt the same, but Lockridge noted the growing deficit the county faced. Supervisor Shiflett expressed discontent with vehicles being taken out of the county on a daily basis. County Admin Bender asked if both boards wanted to go ahead and take care of the county's garage now, and all of them expressed interest. Supervisor Burns shared the consensus from the meeting was that the school system is going to hand over maintenance, fuel sites, and its bus garage to the county, along with trimming any additional items the school system can. The next budget meeting will be held by the school board April 29th at 11 a.m. at the school administration building in Warm Springs. For AMR News, I'm Abby Dufour.
This is Carrie Sponagle, your Virginia Cooperative Extension agent for Bath and Highland Counties, and today I would like to speak to you about the Invasive Plant Control Program for Highland County. The Highland County Board of Supervisors approved an Invasive Plant Control Program for the county for 2024. Under this program, Highland County landowners with at least 50 acres with 10% infestation of three main species of invasive plants can apply for an incentive payment to offset herbicide costs to target these specific invasives. Landowners can receive up to 50% cost share on herbicides approved under the program. Invasives targeted are multiflora rose, Japanese barberry, and autumn olive. These species establish themselves on poor soils, crowding out native plants, and are spread by birds. Application and information packets are being sent via paper mail and email listings from the Highland Extension office. To participate, landowners must complete the application and return it to the Highland Extension office through April 30th. Following application review, approved applicants will be sent a letter indicating the maximum payment for which they would qualify. Approved applicants must use listed herbicides in the program guidelines. Original pesticide purchase receipts must be submitted to the Highland Extension office by the last business day in September. Herbicide applications must be completed by the end of September. Treated areas may be subject to spot checks. Qualifying program participants will receive their incentive payment from Highland County in October. The cost share payment is for purchases of herbicide only, not to include equipment or application costs. Payment received for herbicides will be lesser of 1. The amount stated in the approval letter, or 2. 50% of the cost of the herbicide. This is a first-come, first-served basis program in Highland County. A waiting list will be maintained to accommodate landowners that sign up after all the funds are allocated. For more information, please contact Virginia Cooperative Extension Highland County at 540-468-2225 or email myself, Carrie Sponagle, at karis@vt.edu.
The Great Greenbrier River Race is coming up tomorrow. It starts at 11 a.m. and it's on Main Street in Marlinton. It's always a fun race to watch as they go through a 3-mile run, a 4-mile kayak ride down to Buckeye, and then they get out and do a 10-mile bike ride down the trail and then back up to Marlinton. So it's quite a race to watch. A lot of fun. An intro to Birding Walk is at the Green Bank Public Library tomorrow from 10 a.m. to noon. Binoculars are limited, so they do ask that you please bring your own if you have them. More information at 304-456-4507. And Zuzu's Hot Five brings traditional 1920s jazz to the Pocahontas Opera House tomorrow night, starting at 7:30 p.m. There is a fee for those over 17.
West Virginia Metro News. I'm Chris Lawrence. State Department of Health engaged in contact tracing after the confirmation of a measles case in Monongahela County, the first in West Virginia since 2009. State Health Officer Dr. Matthew Christensen says they're trying to keep ahead of any potential spread.
It is something that we're watching very closely and making sure that we can stop this in its tracks and keep other vulnerable people from getting sick.
Health officials say they have found more than 150 people who were potentially exposed to the person who tested positive, and 62% of them did not have the full protection they need. State Senate Minority Leader Mike Woeffel says that Boone County school system cannot be held responsible for not knowing the situation involving a 14-year-old girl who was recently found dead of starvation in her home. Senator Woeffel says that Kennedy Miller was being homeschooled, and that should relieve the Boone County School Board of any responsibility.
Board of Education really had no legal duty to check on this kid based on the fact that she was being homeschooled.
Miller died last week, and deputies say her body was in a skeletal state when found. Her mother, Julie Miller, is jailed on charges of felony child neglect resulting in death. Logan County deputies are on the hunt of a person involved in the death of a man and his dog. Body of the victim, who was in his 30s, was found along with that dog in the Mount Gay area this morning in outside of Logan. Both had been shot, but authorities are still investigating the circumstances. You're listening to Metro News, the voice of West Virginia.
Are you a military veteran? Do you need a computer refresher course? Do you need help with finding resources to attend college or trade school? Veterans Upward Bound can help with refresher courses and tutoring services, obtaining military transcripts, understanding GI Bill benefits, school and programs of study, admission and enrollment process, financial aid process, and time-saving links to veteran agencies. Veterans Upward Bound representatives are available to meet with you at a nearby convention. For more information, please visit the website at vubwv.org. All services and materials provided at no cost to program participants. Veterans Upward Bound is 100% federally funded by the U.S. Department of Education.
This weekend is a drug take-back day across the country. Various law enforcement departments in West Virginia have collection points in place to accept your unused or expired prescriptions that you may have in your medicine cabinet to ensure they are properly disposed. The deadline to apply for the 2024 West Virginia Scholar Program is Sunday. That program, now in its 17th year, includes a four-year scholarship to West Virginia Wesleyan. Start your application at WBMetroNews.com. From the Metro News Anchor Desk, I'm Chris Lawrence.
The Highlands Community Orchestra will present their spring concert this Sunday at 3 p.m. at the Highland Center in Monterey. Everyone is welcome, and it will be followed by refreshments. Pocahontas County High School Career Day is Monday from noon to 3 p.m. at the school's gym. More information at 304-799-6564. Highland Elementary School's kindergarten registration is happening on Monday, May 20th from 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. at the Highland Elementary School. More information at 540-468-6360. And you must have your child's birth certificate when you go to register them. All 2023 Pocahontas County real and personal taxes must be paid in full by Tuesday to avoid publication and penalties. You've been listening to Noon Hour Magazine here on Allegheny Mountain Radio, WVMR Frost, West Virginia, WVLS Monterey, Virginia, WCHG Hot Springs, Virginia, WVMR FM Hillsboro, West Virginia, WNMP Marlinton, West Virginia, WDMT Marlinton, West Virginia, W278AL Durban, West Virginia, and online at AlleghenyMountainRadio.org. We are your listener-supported community radio stations. We've got Ozark Highlands Radio coming your way at 1 o'clock. At 2 o'clock, it's a TGIF Bluegrass with your host, DJ Willie. And then we shift things over to Abby for DeFour du Jour, taking you down into the evening. Be sure to tune in for LD tonight coming up at 6 o'clock.